My seminary professor said with great certainty to all of us gathered there in our initial classes, our first year, they said with great certainty, every preacher only has one sermon, and she preaches it over and over. Well, we believed them, absolutely believed them. And I was just glad that pretty early on I found my one sermon. Actually, it had been preached before by a man named Howard Thurman, who many of you know because he was a great theologian. And that one sermon I stumbled upon that Howard Thurman had put so eloquently went like this. When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among brothers and sisters, to make music in the heart. Then indeed, we shall be blessed. My seminary professors did not expect COVID. Never could have predicted the situation we find ourselves in tonight in this empty sanctuary. And so I cannot bring myself to offer my one sermon, my go-to sermon. I can't bring myself to invite you tonight to go to work. Yes, it's very important to me what happens after you say, I believe. After you say, I believe, I want to know what you're going to do about it. We say each week that we're people in whom hope and love and peace rise up. We're people who believe that the truest expression of our belief is the way that we act in the world. So that's my one sermon. And I just don't find it right for this night. We've worked just to get by. I know it's not on a grand scale the way some things are, but it's huge. Bigger than any challenge most of us have ever been through. And so tonight, I just want to offer some stories, some ways of thinking about this night and what it means to those of us who call ourselves Christians. All of Advent, we've built our theme around a poem that was found etched into the wall of a concentration camp cell after World War II. It was written by a Jewish prisoner, we're pretty sure, though we don't know the name of that person. And you might think, well, what does a poem written by a Jewish person have to do with Christmas Eve? Well, you don't have to get very far to find it, because this poem was a poem about believing in God even when we don't see the clear signs, when we don't see the clear signs of God with us, of God's favor with us, of God's love for us, when things are a challenge. The poem goes like this: I believe in the sun even when it is not shining. And I believe in love even when there's no one there. And I believe in God even when God is silent. I believe through any trial there's always a way, but sometimes in this suffering and hopeless despair, my heart cries for shelter to know someone's there. But a voice rises within me saying, hold on, my child. I'll give you strength. I'll give you hope. Just stay a little while. I believe in the sun, even when it's not shining. I believe in love, even when I can't feel it. I believe in God, even when God is silent. And that is somehow easier for me on Christmas Eve. There's this fantastic story about these two people traveling to Bethlehem, a woman who is far into her pregnancy, and a man who has chosen to stay beside her as her intended husband, even though the child she carries is not his. These two traveling to Bethlehem to give birth because all of the people have been called to the towns of their forefathers, and Joseph is on his way to Bethlehem, the city of David, because he's of the family of David. It's a fantastic story. We've talked about it for 4 weeks now. Many of you know it by heart. What does that story have to give us on a night like tonight? Well, let me share with you a commentary on that story. This comes from Edwin McManus's book, and it's a story. His book is called Soul Cravings, and this is a story from his book about a trip that he took to the Middle East. He went to the Middle East, and a group of Christians had invited him to speak there, but to speak to Muslim people about the history of Christianity. And McManus had spent a great deal of time and effort preparing his talk. He knew that there were common stories, that there were common ancestors in this Muslim tradition. And he prepared his talk very carefully. But he realized that what his talk didn't cover was the thing that the Muslim people were the most interested in. They wanted to know what is the meaning of this Jesus? What is this coming of Jesus about? And so McManus set to work trying to explain it to them, and he began with a theological explanation, and he looked out and he could see the people, and they just weren't connecting. They were hearing his words, but he could see that nothing was moved in them. And he wanted to have an impact on them, so he decided to put away his notes and to change his approach. He started over, and this is what he said. I once met a girl named Kim. Well, when he said that, his interpreters, who had been busy trying to interpret his Christian theology into Arabic, they looked at him confusedly, and he looked back and just encouraged him to keep going, keep translating. And McManus started over again, kind of like we did tonight, started over again. I once met a girl named Kim, and I fell in love, he said. And I pursued her with my love and pursued her with my love until I felt like my love had captured her heart. So I asked her to be my wife, and she did not say yes. Here, McManus says he finally felt that he was beginning to connect to the audience. He could feel their pity for him when he said, and she did not say yes. He went on, I was unrelenting, and I asked her again. And I pursued her with my love, and I pursued her with my love until she said yes. He said he heard a deep sigh of relief from the room. McManus continued, when I found myself loving deeply this woman named Kim, and I wanted her to know absolutely, I did not send my brother. I did not send a friend to tell her. For in issues of love, you must go yourself. This birth of Christ story, this fantastic story, some might say it's a ridiculous story, but this Christmas story is about exactly that, about a God who pursued the people, loved the people, blessed the people, led the people, and the people did not return that love. Over and over again, God pursued the people, and the people did not return that love. So God came to earth in the form of a human person, Jesus of Nazareth, hoping that this time the people would get it. Hoping that this time the people would understand how great God's love for us is. You know, we need stories like that. On a night like tonight, especially, we don't need theology. We don't need explanations. We need to hear a story that speaks to us of love and speaks to our hearts. Stories are how we connect ourselves into our own history. Stories can help us to anchor ourselves in the things that we believe in. I talked to my daughter, my oldest daughter, earlier this evening and told her I wanted to borrow one of her stories for tonight's sermon. And she asked me which one. I said, the toothbrush story. And she said, oh, Mama, really? And I said, yes, the toothbrush story. She said, you know, if the kids hear me telling it, I'm going to have to tell it 50 times. I said, I know, that's my whole point. So she gathered the kids around. Would you like to hear the toothbrush story? Yes, the toothbrush story, the toothbrush story. And she tells the story. It was early in the life of our second grandchild, of Teo at the time. And Landy was deprived of sleep, as new parents are. But she had finally fallen asleep when she awoke to a noise, brr, brr. And she couldn't be sure, but she thought it was coming from the garage, and she was pretty certain that someone was trying to break into the garage. So she ran into the other room and woke up her husband. Well, her husband is a large man, and so he fearlessly stood up to his full height and walked out towards the garage. He opened the garage door, he turned on the light, and there was nothing there. So he started to make his way back to bed, and then they both heard it. Brr, brr. So he went back towards the garage, but before he got to the garage, he had an idea. He opened the cabinet above the washing machine, and there, where it was doing double duty as a stain-removing scrub brush, was a battery-powered toothbrush. Brr, brr. That's the kid's favorite story. For months, it's been the kid's favorite story. Why? Because that story tells them that someone is on duty. Someone is watching over them. Someone is taking care of them and looking after them and loving them, even when they're asleep. That's what this story does for us, this Christmas story. It gives us a chance to believe that our God is not far away in the heavens and far removed from us, but close. Close enough to touch and to touch us. It's a fantastic story. Yeah, some might call it ridiculous. But if you take away all that's difficult to believe about it, you have a very simple story about God who so loves us. I want to tell you one more story before I close this evening. It's a story that I recently heard on an episode of Snap Judgment. And the woman telling the story had been a journalist covering some of the most frightening stories in our world. She covered terrorists. She covered clandestine arms sales. She covered the biggest things that we hope never happen. But she finally realized, you know, if I really want to make a difference in all of this, I can't just report on it. I need to get involved in it. And she became a CIA undercover operative. Early on, she was assigned to a weapons dealer named Jacob. Jacob dealt not just with weapons, but with nuclear weapons. He was providing nuclear weapons to governments and others who intended to use them against human targets. Amaryllis, the CIA operative, began a relationship with Jacob, and eventually she came into the presence of his boss, the man who was deciding what would be sold to whom and sometimes where or if or when these weapons would be used. Amaryllis arranged a meeting, and she was taken into a room where she finally met the big leader. He was an old gentleman, and she was surprised as she came into this room by two things. One, that the room was filled with weapons, yes, but that's not what surprised her. It was also filled with books. And number two, this gentleman, this leader of these terrorists, this weapon salesman, was holding a baby. She could tell that the baby was struggling to breathe, that its lungs and throat were full of mucus. And being a young mother herself, she didn't think twice. She should have. But she reached into her bag that she was carrying. Immediately, the men around the room reached for their rifles. But she reached into the bag and she pulled out a tiny vial. And she said to the man, "Have you ever tried clove oil?" He looked at her suspiciously. So she took the lid off of the vial and she held it to her own nose and inhaled. And then she handed it towards the man. He motioned the men beside the door, and one of them left. And Amaryllis knew that was a very dangerous situation to be in because she didn't know what was going to come back. But what came back was a woman. And a woman was carrying a branch. The branch was covered with white blossoms. And the man said to Amaryllis, "Allison. Allison, is it good for asthma?" She said, "Yes," he said, "it's good for asthma. And it tastes like broccoli." And the two of them continued to talk and to exchange these home remedies and to talk about what would help the child and what was difficult about the work that they did. And they talked like two just normal people, despite the fact that this man was responsible for the deaths of hundreds. And as Amaryllis realized that their time was going to be up, she looked at the man and she said, "I hope that this means that there will not be a sale today, that there will not be a target today. And he said, there will not be a target today, but won't we just pick new targets tomorrow? And she said, maybe so. But the Quran says to save one human life is to save all humankind. So can we just save all of humankind today, even if it's going to destroy itself again tomorrow? Amaryllis left that meeting. Soon she was contacted by her boss, who said, all is safe. There has been no attack today. Either the action has been deferred or a new target has been selected. But for one day, Amaryllis was able to stop certain death and destruction. Maybe that's the point of this story that we share on Christmas Eve. When we slow down for one night, when we think in terms not of the glorious, resurrected, victorious Jesus of Easter, but the tiny baby, the symbol of grace, the symbol of love. If we could just live one day over and over, one story over and over, perhaps, and I could get into trouble for saying this, perhaps Easter is not the one. Perhaps there's a little more necessary humility in the Christmas Eve story. Perhaps that's the one that we should tell over and over, especially at a time like this, when everything seems dangerous, and so much is lonely, and so many of us are isolated. Tonight, just for tonight, I'm not going to ask you to go to work, to save the world, to do anything at all, but just to rest in the knowledge that God so loves the world, that God comes to the world in the form of Jesus, a baby born in the city of David in Bethlehem. May that story ease your heart. May that story raise your spirits. May that story be a gift to you on this Christmas Eve. Amen.